A teacher at Strawberry Hill Elementary School in Stamford is accused of sexually assaulting a dozen students. 33-year-old Andrew Park faced a judge this week, and while the case plays out, it was ruled that he cannot have any contact with minors other than his one-year-old daughter. That's according to reports this morning. And look, this story is not to talk about things that are uncomfortable. It's not to talk about drama and to get into things that we don't, as I would hope regular citizens of Connecticut want to talk about. But it's to use this as an example of, even though it is rare for this to happen at our schools, it can happen, whether it's at the school, at a grocery store, even in a family. And there are two big things that I hope we take away from this story. One is, hopefully we as parents and adults and anybody who has a child in their lives and you have direct contact with them on a daily basis, hopefully we can learn something to detect if something is off about people that our kids are familiar with. But also, the big thing in this story that I took away when I heard about it first was the investigation started when female students at the school complained about being inappropriately touched by a male teacher. This started because kids spoke up about it. So how do we empower our kids to talk about this and speak up when they feel uncomfortable, especially when this is something most parents would never want to talk to their kids about? For that, we go to one of our law enforcement experts, Gary McNamara, who is back on the show. He is the former chief of police in Fairfield, and he currently is doing security and government affairs at Sacred Heart University. And Gary, welcome back to the show. Thank you for being here.
Marissa, thanks so much for having me, as always. We had spoken about this a couple months back, and obviously it's always, when these stories come out, it's always a good reminder that the conversation should always continue.
It should always continue and be a refresher. And the other thing too, though, Gary, is that the last time you came on, the reason we were discussing this was because it was that little girl who was in the northern part of Connecticut. I don't remember which town it was, but she knew when there was a situation of a man following her home from school, she ran into a local Dunkin' Donuts and then called for help. But this is the thing that we sort of touched on the last conversation we had, but we couldn't really talk about it because this wasn't a familiar face to this little girl. The fact that there are people our kids are familiar with, and a lot of times we think nothing about it. And this could be beyond just teachers, right, Gary? I mean, kind of talk about that there are a lot of familiar people your kids know and probably are comfortable enough that they wouldn't even know that they could become the victim of something like a sexual assault.
Yeah, it goes back to the old adage of stranger danger. And, you know, that in some ways is a very easy conversation to have because it portrays this bad person, this unknown person lurking out there, and you should always be aware for that person. And it gets a sense of even the conversations we could have about some sort of predator, somebody that is lurking, and we always want to be careful for that person, which happens, but it doesn't happen as often as these. You know, we hear the term grooming, and we hear that, you know, everybody starts out as a stranger in our lives in some form or fashion until we get to know them. And that's really at the heart of where the conversation should go. It shouldn't be only talking about this predator, the girl walking down the street that gets the sense that she's being followed or maybe abducted. It's this person that comes into our kids' lives, and you're right, they're all over the place because we interact as humans, that are not strangers. They're familiar to us. They don't fit the definition of a stranger, which is someone that's unfamiliar or that we just met. They're not that, because they become part of our child's life, and they're people that we know, we're familiar with. So they're not strangers.
And, you know, it's interesting, Gary, because a couple of weeks ago, I know you and I had back-to-back, I think, vacation times, because I really wanted to talk about this, actually, with you. Have you seen the new documentary that everyone's talking about? I believe it's on Netflix, Quiet on Set. I don't know if it's on Netflix. Might be on Hulu. Whatever.
No, I have not.
It's intense. And it looks at child actors, specifically with Nickelodeon in the 90s. And how they were very much exploited, and you know, child labor laws were definitely not, you know, were certainly ignored, and even to the point where you learn about some, you know, some of the biggest stars in Nickelodeon days of the 90s, who were sexually exploited by people they knew on set, you know, people that they that had, again, like you're talking about grooming these kids, and then not even realizing that they're falling into this trap, essentially. And I think the thing that frustrated me the most about watching Quiet on Set is not just obviously that there are sick people out there. I think I'll never get over the fact that there are sick people out there, but it's that parents didn't see it at all. They didn't see it at all. Or if they did, they didn't feel it was worth speaking up because of what you said before. It's so rare. It's not going to be my kid. And so it was easier to say, hey, you know what, my kid is getting an acting gig right now. I'm not going to interrupt it because I think it's weird that this person's putting their arm around my kid's shoulder all the time. And it feels inappropriate, but I'm not going to say anything because it can't really mean that. It can't actually mean that. And I don't want to interrupt my kid's acting career. Same sort of thing, though, with this. I'm not this situation, but when you hear about, you know, somebody, like you said, at the grocery store, or, you know, somebody at a school, or even a family member, the immediate reaction a lot of times is, I didn't see that coming at all. I had no idea. I wish I had known. What can parents do to not be so in the dark, or to not see the signs? Like, what should we be looking for?
Well, I think there's a couple things. If we get away from that stranger conversation, we have to start looking at, I believe, two things. One is situations, and because these things will occur, is situational. So we want to make sure that we have discussions about what's appropriate in a situation, number one, and then it's tied with behavior. And that's really at the heart of it. Because if there is something that parents see, some sort of a behavior, either by a trusted person in our kids' lives or somebody that they just met, it has to be behavior driven. And if there's something that occurs that parents see and do not think is appropriate, even if it's minor, they have to call it out. You have to call it out. Mm-hmm. You have to kind of have those conversations where, and you know, we can get into social media and the relationship that social media allows for these familiar individuals in our kids' lives, coaches, teachers. You know, when I grew up, when I got on the school bus in sixth grade, I never had contact with my teachers until I came back on Monday. But, you know, emails and homework assignments and communicating via social media or via social media allows those people in our kids' lives to have greater access at times when we wouldn't even think that to occur. So if those behaviors occur, we have to kind of be on alert for them and tie that to the situation. In this situation, and we talked about it before, it's okay to see the person that works in the grocery store with our kids when you're in the grocery store. But if you're and communicate when you're in the grocery store. But if you're not in the grocery store, you're in a different situation. That individual is not paired up to that situation. Therefore, that's a different approach we should have with that person in our kids' lives.
You know, so there's a couple things that you said there, Gary, and I want to do a deeper dive. First of all, maybe looking at more monitoring or what parents should do when it comes to, again, like you said, there's a gray area there. You've got kids who are on social media. I mean, heck, I talk about it all the time. My kindergartner was handed a Chromebook from school, a kindergartner. Yeah. I mean, so yeah. we are shoving technology into our kids' lives, even if the parents don't want it, it's happening. So maybe talking about that. And I love what you talked about, the direct contact. We were just discussing this a few days ago, actually, while I was on vacation. We were talking about how I don't understand how kids are texting their coaches, and the parents are totally not involved in these conversations, and sometimes that can get a little murky. It doesn't always have to, and a lot of times it doesn't, but there are those situations where it flies under the radar. And the other thing is really talking more about changing the conversation, not just alerting our kids to, hey, if somebody you don't recognize comes up to you, run the other way, but maybe talking to your kids about, this should not happen to you. And if this happens to you, you should feel like, hey, I got to tell my mom or dad about this. I got to tell my whoever about this. We are back with our law enforcement expert, Gary McNamara. So, Gary, let's continue the conversation. How do we change the way we talk to our kids from identifying and reacting to stranger danger to these are things that are just never okay for you to go through? And if it happens to you, for whatever reason, you got to tell me about it. You got to tell dad about it. You got to tell grandma or grandpa. You've got to report it and say something. How do we shift the way we talk about this?
You know, it's so hard, Melissa. And if you look at this case in Stanford, they mention, at least in the article, they mention forensic interviews. That means that there's professionals that interviewed these students to get all the information out, because it's so hard for any of us to disclose any trauma that we suffered, but especially kids, it's so hard to do that. So it's so hard to get them to shift, because it's easier to talk about that predator that's hiding in the bushes. Mm-hmm. But I think we have to really focus on situations and behaviors. It is appropriate for your coach or your teacher to have this conversation or act this way. If they act in a different way, that's not really appropriate. It's a harder conversation to have. That's why it's important on the parents to understand it and really set in our minds what's appropriate behavior that we want our teachers to have with our kids. And if there's, we have to be aware of those, that contact, that situational behavior that starts to change over time, that if we never call out something that concerns us, by the time it really concerns us, it's already occurring, mm-hmm. or it could be already occurring. Mm-hmm. So the sooner we call out and set boundaries on behavior, or really say, have conversations with our kids, how come you stayed after school? How was baseball practice? How was this interaction with an adult? You start to kind of develop in our minds what behavior is occurring and what those standards are that we want to enforce for our kids.
I also think, Gary, and, you know, this is where I'd love your, you know, professional opinion on this, certainly with your background in law enforcement. I also think it's a call for parents to not be afraid of their kids and remember that if you're especially the one paying for the roof over their heads and paying for a cell phone, again, I'm not talking about having a bad relationship with your kids. I think that there is a middle ground there. But I mean, I can remember being a preteen. I hated the fact that my mom would look through every week. She would check my instant messenger friend list and she would check to see who I was friends with and if I couldn't identify them or if it wasn't somebody she knew was a good friend of mine, she deleted them right there on the spot. I mean, my mom did very frequent cell phone checks on us, and I hated it. I absolutely hated it. But, you know, looking back at it, you know, once I got into college and even post-college, I realized that, man, there were situations that I got myself in, didn't even realize I was getting myself into it. In fact, one that you and I have talked about before, where a family friend's, at the time, fiance, had done something very inappropriate, and it was all via text message, and then it started to transpire, and my mom caught it right away because she creeped, essentially. And so I don't know if you suggest that, you know, you talk about the emergence of how social media, my gosh, and technology, kids are on it as early as elementary school, and kids, and I was gonna say parents, kind of lose sight of what their kids are doing on their phones, but also even with contacting, texting their coaches or their teachers or emailing them. How involved should parents get with checking those devices?
Well, I mean, you know, certainly if you suspect something, I think you don't have to go from I'm not giving your kid a phone at all, they're not going to have any social media, to I'm going to monitor every single second. But I think what parents have to understand is this shift that they have to be aware of, that sometimes the predators are people that are in our kids' lives that we trust. And it's up to us, all of us, to pay attention for that. To pay attention to what starts out as a normal, appropriate relationship and starts to shift. And now whether or not that involves checking emails or having contact with the coaches or the teachers yourselves, you know, that's going to depend upon the kid, the relationship they have with the parents. But, you know, those interactions are always tough to have. But at some point, parents have to understand that if they don't do anything, you run the risk of having your kid be a victim of somebody that is in their lives that you would never suspect it from occurring. Mm-hmm. And that's the key. I mean, this April is Sexual Assault Awareness and Prevention Month, so it's good we're having these conversations. But we have to remember that the predators we're fearful are going to impact our kids are oftentimes not the predators that we think they are.
Yeah. Gary McNamara, great information as always, and I'm so glad that we continue to have these conversations and really help adults and even kids to just normalize what's going on. I'm not saying normalize the situation, but normalize these conversations so that people can talk about it more and we can do a better job of protecting our kids and detecting sure. when somebody could be a threat. So thank you. I appreciate it.
You got it, Melissa. One more thought on this. Some of the best people and most influential people in my life, probably your life and your kids' life or our kids' lives, are the teachers and the principals and school bus drivers. Mm-hmm. What we want to make sure is that we don't neglect that fact, that they can have positive impact, positive role models. We just want to make sure that the appropriate behavior and location of that behavior is appropriate.
I couldn't agree with you more. Absolutely. And I want to reiterate and stress that Gary and I continue to say that what happened in Stamford is considered rare. This is not something that is running rampant. It's not happening in our public schools all across. But does it happen? It can. And again, it doesn't have to be in our schools. It could be anywhere. It's taking this story and growing as parents or individuals, again, people who have kids in their lives, and just avoiding something like this happening no matter where it happens. But yes, I'm glad that you also reiterated that, Gary, because we do love our teachers. We love our educators. I say all the time, the only reason I'm in the job I'm in is because of my teachers. So I certainly agree with you on that. Certainly.
Okay, be well.
Thank you, Gary. Appreciate you. Gary McNamara, Chief and Executive Director of Public Safety and Government Affairs at Sacred Heart, and also the former Chief of Police in Fairfield.